Morrison once said, "If there's a book you want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, you must be the one to write it." As writer and editor, Toni Morrison uplifted Black female voices in a culture that often dismissed the experiences of people of color.
Today, comedian Matt Brown joins us to take a look at how Toni Morrison, who died last week at the age of 88, supported and inspired a whole generation of writers and artists.
Listen as we chat with Matt about the legacy of this literary giant and why she called Bill Clinton the first Black president.
Plus, Kimmy Schmidt's Titus Burgess slams Andy Cohen as a messy queen after his appearance on his talk show, where Andy tried to get him to diss Eddie Murphy.
Save money with our new guacamole recipe.
And officials say there's no video evidence of Jeffrey Epstein's possible murder.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Filian.
And this is Feast of Fun. If you wanna fly, you gotta give up the shit that weighs you down.
Amen, what? Sister friend.
That is Toni Morrison, the literary giant thought leader, born Chloe Ardelia Wofford.
Yes, ma'am.
And today we are taking a look at her amazing life and legacy, because she is still with us today, even though she passed away at the age of 88 last week.
Did you only introduce her like a sermon because she's Black? You can tell me. It's okay. We're friends.
I love like that so much of the people and entertainers and TV shows and books and musicians. Where would Oprah be? Where would Tyler Perry be? Where would Whoopi Goldberg be today if it wasn't for Toni Morrison?
No. And to answer your question, Fausto has two modes, sermon and Mexican wrestling announcer.
Buenos días. Hoy tenemos el young Black y gay, el tremendo Matt Brown.
Arriba.
It's so great to see you.
I know, isn't it?
Thank you.
Look at me. I'm gorgeous.
Look at me. I'm Matt Brown. Not a virgin.
Oh, honey, not since I was 17.
No, ma'am.
No, I've been a young woman for a long time.
So I think a lot of our listeners may not be aware. Some of them, unfortunately, are not aware of who Toni Morrison was.
Because the internet should make you smarter, but it doesn't.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It makes it you argue with your friends.
Well, we also have people like living all around the world, too. So,
she's
an American author and an English author. And for some of our listeners, English isn't even their first language.
Yeah, no, a lot of people are probably learning English through this program, to be honest.
Actually, you know, some people have written to us and told us that they have learned English.
So there's like some guy in Pakistan right now who speaks English with a gay accent for no reason. Don't you love that? Someone has gay voice because of you. Oh, I love that.
There's people that sound like me because they learned to speak English like me.
Oh, that's fabulous. So they learned how to speak English from a Puerto Rican who didn't come here until he was 19.
Yes, correct.
That's something's going to get lost in translation.
You know, all kinds of things.
Positive instead of positive.
Oh, yes.
Positive.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. Okay.
Give Toni Morrison on her, too. Yeah.
Sorry.
The show is not about me.
But you're so much fun to make fun of, baby.
We can do that later.
Okay, we love Toni Morrison.
Who was Toni Morrison?
Toni Morrison.
Why
is she matter?
Toni Morrison is important because basically she is the foundation for everything that has become what we know of as Black women's culture nowadays. Because honestly, since the 1970s, there has been sort of a separate culture, subculture within Black culture, sort of post-civil rights movement that really was Black women to themselves. And Toni Morrison was an editor in the 1970s, and she was able to get women like Alice Walker access to being published. And so it was this amazing relationship where she was in a position of power and she knew it was her job to empower other people. Mm-hmm. That's one of her quotes. And so because of her, we got these other Black women writers who were then able to sort of start this movement, start this sort of cultural expression, start to begin to give validity to Black women creating literature, being appreciated as literature. Mm-hmm. And then you have Toni come in who borrows things from like Hispanic authors like Garcia Marquez with the whole concept of magical realism. And you have this incredibly educated, incredibly layered woman doing stuff that had never been done before. She's the first Black woman to get a Pulitzer Prize. She's the first Black woman to really represent us in such a gorgeous intellectual way. She was so important for all of us. Without her, there's no Alice Walker. Without her, there's no Cola Booth. Without her, there's no Roxanne Gay.
There's no Matt Brown.
Honestly.
I mean, I have to say, what a beautiful and rapid fire testament to this amazing person's life that you just gave in 3.4 seconds.
I just talk fast, but I have a lot to say.
That was dense, honey.
Go back and listen to that twice. Amen.
And part of it is like Toni Morrison made exciting and mainstream black women's culture.
There's an interview that you can find online. It's not even very long, where a white woman who's interviewing her asks her, so have you ever considered writing books about white people with white characters in them? And Toni just says, you will never understand the magnitude of how fundamentally racist that question is. And just looks at her.
She said about racism and those type of questions on Charlie Rose, that the people who do this thing, who practice racism without even knowing it, are bereft. There's something distorted about their psyche. My feeling is that white people have a very serious problem and that they should start thinking about what they can do about it for themselves. Take me out of it. Racism has a very negative effect, not just on black people, but more on white people.
Oh, absolutely. Because living with fear and living with paranoia is detrimental to anyone. Can I tell you what I think white dudes' two biggest fears are in the whole wide world?
Does it have to do with racism?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. I firmly believe, and I've only lived in America and in the Midwest and in the South my life, so that's the life I know. And I also come to this as someone who's black and white. Mm-hmm. But I really feel like white men's two biggest fears are, one, is that someone is finally going to believe that, like, black men, like, have more masculinity than them. Like, that they're, like, a black man is more of a man than them. I feel like they genuinely feel, like, an inferiority complex because white people subconsciously know that, like, black people have been here longer, that we were here first, that when, like, God's first image of a human being was us and not them. Like, that's who is here, you know, 250,000 years ago and people started coming out in East Africa. Like, that's what that is. And then the second one is, I think that everyone, that white men have a paranoia that everyone's going to find out that they want black pussy. I really, really firmly believe that because they always hide the black girlfriend. They always hide the black mistress. They'll take the white one out to a steakhouse and buy her fake tits. But the black girl, they always hide. They always pretend like she's the maid or the nanny. And then they marry her when they move to Florida for a tax shelter.
Toni Morrison was...
I'm screaming.
Toni Morrison coined the...
You're like, just like, this man is crazy and I like Toni Morrison. Moving on.
But anyways, Toni Morrison was the thought leader who called Bill Clinton the first black president.
Oh, totally.
Not because she thought of him as a black man or because his policies aligned or benefited the suffrage of African Americans, but because he was treated by conservatives and the press as a black man.
Oh, totally. Because he wasn't doing any different behavior than what the rest of them do in their offices. Mm-hmm. But how dare he? How dare he do it? They all did was just have the ugly wife and then fuck everyone else that they want.
She called him the first black president before the sex scandal came out.
Oh, okay. Because
not in reaction to it.
Because I'm unfamiliar with criticism of him pre that.
She said they would eventually be bringing down Bill Clinton. But the harm of that was that it would lead to somebody like Trump today. And in a lot of ways, you know, Toni Morrison is a visionary that gave us the world that we live in today for the better.
Oh, absolutely.
And that passion, that appetite for diversity is insurmountable. You know, it's just so hard to measure and to talk about.
Because the concept she brings up in her books, they are so dramatic and they hurt the people that are in them so much. But if you just look at the concept of what she's actually trying to say, she's making a statement to black people about our community, about what it takes for us to be all right. When you read The Bluest Eye and when you get to the end of it and Pecola has her father's baby and the baby dies and she's mentally ill walking around in circles in her front yard, Toni Morrison is saying that the racism and the abuse that we go through as black people in the black community leads to a type of mental distortion. When you keep showing people that are equal, that they ain't shit, they will start to believe that about themselves and it fucks with your mind. When you read Beloved and that woman kills her baby before it can ever be enslaved, what she's really saying is that it is going to take the sacrifice of a parent to make anything good happen for the next generation of these children, and you might have to put them on the line or yourself on the line to make that happen.
Well, her writing was all about the allegory and she was good friends with James Baldwin, who is a great thought, a thought leader in the African American community, and also gay, and has some great opinions about white gay men.
Without him, there's really no me, because you know how I talk about you people.
Exactly.
You know what comes out my mouth.
And this is what he said about her, and he kind of gives you a gist of just how meaningful her work is. He goes, "Toni's my ally, and it's really probably too complex to get into. She's a black woman writer, which in the public domain makes it more difficult to talk about. Her gift is an allegory. Tar Baby is an allegory. In fact, all her novels are. But they're hard to talk about in public. That's where you get into trouble, because her books and allegory are not always what it seems to be about. Mm-hmm. I was too occupied with my recent illness to deal with Beloved. But in general, she's taken a myth, or she takes what seems to be a myth and turns it into something else. I don't know how to put this. Beloved could be about the story of truth. She's taken a whole lot of things and turned them upside down. Some of them, you recognize the truth in it. I think that Toni is very painful to read.
It is so painful because she makes all these great points so small and so human and so personal and so could be you or the woman down the street or someone that you've met or that you've worked with. Mm. Everybody knows and saw that little girl at their school that was like Pecola, that wasn't very pretty and didn't get any attention, and you knew her home life was bad, but you weren't going to deal with it because that wasn't your fucking problem. You know, it's so real. It's so, so incredibly real. I honestly kind of look at Beloved as sort of like a stretch of Medea, because like at the end, everyone's got to fucking die. Mm. Everyone's got to fucking die, and I'm out of here, because ultimately that's the only way this is going to be.
You're not talking about Tyler Perry's Medea.
I hate you. I hate you. I am talking about Euripides, and you went to college. I am hurt.
I'm just thinking now here is like, is this why Tyler Perry called her my Dia?
I'm going to beat your ass. No, because that's a Southern contraction for mother dear.
Mother dear. Medea. Yeah.
My dear. Right?
But it's also like Medea, you know, so it's like.
Yeah, because, you know, Greeks.
Listen, you know, Tyler Perry is no dummy. Mm-hmm.
I really don't think that's the point, baby. I really don't.
She's going to kill. I bet you the last Medea movie, she's going to kill all of her children.
Yeah, she's going to take them all to the church, push the pillars down, set it on fire, kill her ex-husband's girlfriend and run out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take that rocket ship to the moon.
Mm-hmm, all the way, baby. All the way. She'll have flying monkeys like the fucking evil witch in Over the Rainbow or whatever. Lizard of Oz. What faggot am I that I said Over the Rainbow first?
Let's trace back every popular black entertainer that we love and cherish.
7 degrees of separation from Toni Morrison.
7 degrees. Oprah Winfrey.
Okay. Oprah Winfrey goes back to Color Purple, which goes back to Alice Walker, which goes back to Toni Morrison.
Alice Walker credits Toni Morrison with inspiring her to write The Color Purple. And I think Toni Morrison was instrumental in getting that book published.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Another thing that Toni Morrison said in an interview that really, really just touched me, like as a writer and as someone who works for myself and for other people in that capacity, is that she viewed when she first began writing, and she didn't start writing till she was like a grown ass woman, like she was in her mid 30s, like she was an adult. Mm-hmm. She said, "I viewed writing as an extended reading process, because I was always reading so much anyway. It just felt like an extension of that. I just pulled it from that energy, from that."
I really like that, because I think that's kind of what we're doing here on the podcast too, is that people are always like, "How do you know all about this stuff?" And it's like, well, we don't know it. We're researching and sort of, you know, hastily writing a report for you guys and making it entertaining and exciting. And part of it is like, I feel like, you know, especially with queer culture, we're very excited about someone like Beyonce.
Yes.
What's the 7 degrees of separation of Beyonce and Toni Walker?
I'm sure they've met.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Toni Morrison was in the Beehive.
Toni Morrison, I mean. Sorry.
I'm sure that she used to get in Twitter fights with people who were mean to Beyonce from her fucking professorship at Harvard. Mm-hmm. She was just like, "If you ain't a single lady, fuck you, bitch." I'm sure that was her last fucking writing credit.
Well, like Oprah used to sit at the foot of Maya Angelou, and Maya Angelou would read to Oprah.
And Maya Angelou would just like hum in that deep voice, like looking like an Easter Island head.
There is a river.
Maya, stop it.
Whoopi Goldberg, of course, The Color Purple.
Oh, yeah.
Back to that.
You know, that was one of the few times where Whoopi looked like feminine. In that movie.
You show is ugly, Miss Seeley. You know, I'm really upset that The Color Purple musical They took so many good things out of the movie, it almost was not even recognizable.
Well, the movie's like 3.5 hours long. Like, it's like Lord of the Rings.
Even though Quincy Jones was involved in the production, and I still don't understand
Quincy
this.
Quincy Jones was busy thinking about Marlon Brando and Richard Pryor fucking. But he had priorities. Wasn't that revealed?
Oh, yeah. He was the one who started talking about that.
He opened his 90-year-old mouth.
He's like, did you know those two were fucking all the time?
Because you know why he's like that? Because his last wife was white and he learned how to talk shit from her. That's how that works.
He does not give a fuck.
Black guys who fuck white women love to gossip like their girlfriends. It just takes a while. They all learn.
And if you guys don't know who Quincy Jones is, he's one of the greatest musical conductors, pop music producers.
Oh, absolutely.
He produced Michael Jackson's Thrill album, USA for Africa, We Are the World.
Like from the 60s
and the Sanford and Son theme song. But the use of a bass harmonica in it is fantastic.
And also him and Aretha.
And Aretha Franklin, yeah. But Quincy Jones, so in the production of the Color Purple musical didn't bring, I guess the studios owned a lot of the music. So Miss Seeley's Blue, Sister, You're on My Mind.
Yeah.
Oh, Sister.
Which isn't even her singing.
I know. It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
And, you know, drag queens love to lip sing and stuff. It's like,
Queens can't go anywhere without a fucking jukebox.
Where would Jennifer Holliday and Dreamgirls be without Toni Morrison?
Can we put that on a t-shirt?
They can't leave their house without a fucking, what's it called? A disk drive? Is that what they use now? I don't know what the young people do.
They just email songs.
You send songs in an email? How does that work? Someone needs to teach me how to use a computer. Do you like Microsoft Word?
Are we playing this game or not?
Oh, what?
Jennifer Holliday.
Okay, so Jennifer Holliday. Ooh, mama.
Yes,
okay.
Dreamgirls. It's based on Diana Ross. Diana Ross be without Toni Morrison?
Okay, so this is what we do. Because Diana Ross came first.
Yes.
I think Diana's taken care of. So we can go Jennifer Holliday to Jamie Foxx.
Good, yes.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go to Jamie Foxx, and we'll go to Ray Charles.
Okay.
And then from Ray Charles, I don't know. Maybe he killed a baby once. I don't fucking know. I honestly don't know. I don't think they're related, baby. I think your game's over.
Okay, so we're not going to do this.
Yeah, no, because I don't know. Because Toni Morrison was a fucking writer. She was influential, like, for us in the sense that in ethnic studies, because my degree is sociology and African American studies, in ethnic studies, we take songs, we take oral tradition, we take folk tales, we take documentaries, we take video footage, we take interviews with like old slaves, we take enslaved people, excuse me, we take all of that to be literature in the same way that like English majors consider Faulkner to be all of that, in the same way that other cultures, in the same way that Latino people have the Popol Vuh, South American people have that. Like, we look at that the same way, even though it's not technically like a fucking book. And so Toni Morrison gave us like a lot of our academic.
So we can talk about magical realism.
Yeah.
Which is her style. What is that exactly?
Okay, so magical realism is this literary concept that I love playing with on stage because it's sort of related to absurdism, but it really comes from Garcia Marquez is really, really known as like the main proponent of it. And basically magical realism is these stories or books that basically it starts in a logical place. It starts in a very grounded reality that makes sense. But then these little things that are completely supernatural or completely illogical or sound like a hallucination or sound like an acid trip will just happen right in the middle of it. And everyone accepts it as complete and total truth. And everything's fine because it's part of that reality. Mm-hmm. And then we just go back to the normal logical part. Mm-hmm. Like one of my favorite Garcia Marquez stories. Oh, yeah. I just had to throw in the accent in there for no reason. I said it normally three times. Yeah. One of my favorite stories by him is Innocent Head, which is a story about this girl named Irendera who accidentally burns down her grandma's house with a candle. Like, she's cleaning and she just went to sleep so tired and she forgot, so she burns down the house with this candle. And then when they wake up to the ashes, her grandma takes her out to the desert and starts whoring her out to make her money back so she can buy a house again.
Oh my God.
Like, it starts normal and then it goes there.
It goes off the rails.
Yeah, and then she gets rescued by this guy whose dad, he grows oranges that have diamonds inside of them.
Do you feel like Beloved, because of that style and structure, was a hard film to make and ultimately it didn't do well in the box office starring Oprah Winfrey?
It didn't do well in the box office because no one wants to see the richest black woman on the planet as a slave. Like, I'm sorry, we're not doing that. It's just like when Mariah Carey was a field slave in The Butler. It's like she was in the house bent over. Come on, stop it.
But Precious was really fun to watch.
She can play Sally Hemings.
Precious was great, and Mariah Carey was a social worker in that film.
Oh, yeah, and they put that awful wig on her and drew a mustache on. on everything. It was fabulous. She looked so shitty in that movie.
So we want to see them suffer, but not that much.
Yeah. Like, you want to see Mariah Carey look like she has a desk job. Like, that's acceptable. But, like, Oprah Winfrey is a slave. Like, come on, a slave. Like, come on. We're doing that. Like, come on.
It is interesting that Oprah, like, in films, except for The Color Purple, well, even in The Color Purple,
she did takes that one scene all out
extremes.
Cotton.
You know, like, A Wrinkle in Time, she's this, like, cosmic goddess. Mm-hmm. And she's insufferable in that. And she, you know,
but that's probably how she like actually views herself, because I think she thinks she's like Black Wonder Woman.
In some ways, she is. Come on, for a lot of people, they worship and adore Oprah. We used to do these 10 questions on the show. Like at the end, it's like, what do you see Oprah doing in 5 years? And it was 50-50. Some people are like, I wish she was dead. And other people are like, I love Oprah.
I just really want to go to Vatican City and see Oprah give a mass. That would just—that's really like that's
I'd like to see a black mass at Vatican
City.
Too.
That's where I'm
you
at.
Know Oprah. Well, when she's Oprah talks, people listen. And she's a really great orator.
Oh, absolutely. If someone else gives her shit to say, she can fuck it up. She really can. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So in terms of like future black feminist mm-hmm. writers, who do you think is sort of carrying that mantle besides Tyler Perry?
Oh yeah, because you know he is just one of the youngest black women alive. I would really say at this point I am so ready to see Roxane Gay get into her old angry lesbianhood. Like I am so ready for the fucking book she's gonna put out in 15 years when she's just like 60 and ready to fuck everyone up, because like god help anyone who has to deal with an angry black lesbian. Like honestly, studs don't put up with a goddamn thing from anybody because they shouldn't have to. And like, I am just ready for her to be in that point in her life and be writing from it. It'll be very Audre Lorde, but like with a pocket knife. And like, I'm down. I'm so down.
Have you ever considered like writing books? Because you're such a prolific thinker and you have such a wonderful way with words that, you know, I know that. You know, stand-up comedy and show business is really sort of your first love mm-hmm. is music.
Yeah, I did that from 11 to 18. For my education right now, I do a ton of writing and a ton of reading. And if I wasn't a comedian, I would be one of those assholes that had their PhD when they were 24.
Yeah.
I would just be like that.
Piled high and deep.
So deep. My hole. I would really have a good time doing that sort of shit because I am endlessly fascinated by it and I'm incredibly aggressive and I'm a real overachiever. So like, that's just how I am. Like, for example, this past weekend I was featuring at Comedy Bar, which is an absolute blast. They're my home club. It was my very first time. The first place I ever did stand up.
Congratulations.
And it was my 3 year anniversary. It was my 3 year anniversary that month, and I got to feature there, which Wonderful. Is amazing. And I did 6 shows in a weekend and I made every single set different. There was some joke overlap, but like the order would be different, or I would interact with the crowd at different moments.
So you're like a Japanese steakhouse chef whipping up the dish right in front of the audience.
I have an act, I have material, but I don't have a beginning, middle, and end. And I really feel like I'm half the audience's half. I feel like they bring the energy that decides what we do together.
And you have a gig coming up in Indiana.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be featuring at the Drop Comedy Club in Indiana in 2 weekends. I think August 24th, 25th.
In now, South Bend.
Yes, in South Bend.
Home Friday of and Saturday. Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah. Should I make fun of him?
Well, this is the thing. Like, you were on the show a month ago.
Maybe 2 months.
Like, 2 episodes ago, maybe.
And we got some feedback from
hate
our
mail.
Listeners.
It wasn't feedback. It was hate mail.
And they were very upset at you describing Chasten Buttigieg, his husband, as a pile of melting ice cream.
He looks like a scoop of melted ice cream.
An ice cream cone is what you said. A melting ice cream cone.
Oh, that's what I said. I'll have to listen back to get the exact
And a melting
verbiage.
Ice cream cone is delicious. I don't think it's necessarily bad. Yeah,
I wouldn't. Not with someone else's tongue.
So it wasn't just him, but it was, you know, you went off on Mayor Pete for president.
Well, because I just really feel like as gay people, because we're still in a period of time where gay people are doing historic firsts.
Yes.
I plan on being the first gay black guy to do a lot of stuff. He's going to be the first gay guy, white guy to do a lot of stuff. And because that's just the period of time we're in. Mm-hmm. And since you're a role model and since people are looking at you, the least you could do is have an attractive boyfriend.
Oh my God.
The least you could
have a husband.
Do.
So you're saying he should have a boyfriend on the side?
Like a mistress.
Something brown and smart. Something. maybe nice and
so you're worried,
a nice studious Guatemalan, possibly.
You think that, so because you have this kind of humor based around him, and you're wondering if you should go to South Bend.
Yeah, because I'm already
going.
Comedy
club. and tell jokes about Pete Buttigieg.
Because the thing is, like, I'm going to probably be doing like 15 to 20 minute sets. So yeah. like if I stick it somewhere in the middle, I might die for the rest of it and then just have to like flop sweat up there and wait for the light. Like, yeah. you know, if I do it at minute 8 and they're not happy, it's just like, mm-hmm. so my niece and I went to the zoo.
I'm guessing that Pete Buttigieg to the people of South Bend, Indiana, is kind of their great white hope, especially to progressive people who
I've never had a white hope before.
Well, you know, he's somebody who they're hoping will become president and, you know, lift them up.
He's more of a governor or senator.
I think he's more of a governor.
He's more of like a nice lobbyist. Maybe.
But the thing about it is, like, he's a vice president or something like that. You never know. It's like he's young. He's cute. He's attractive.
I don't know.
Who Pete is. Don't you think Pete's cute?
My mother thinks he's cute.
I think he's cute.
But, you know, for a lot of LGBT people.
I need a toilet bowl, quickly.
For a lot of LGBT people and a lot of people of color, they don't necessarily trust him. And he is one Democratic candidate.
Well, if I can't trust a white gay to let me into a bar, why would I trust him to, like, secure my rights?
He's one of the Democratic candidates.
What the fuck? What the fuck? Answer that question. No one can.
He's a Democratic candidate who's very much funded a lot by corporate interests.
Billionaires. Mm-hmm. He has the most... billionaires donating to his campaign.
And we already got our corporate Democrat. We had 8 years of Obama. We know what that looks like.
And when I point this out to my mother, she goes, "You're just jealous of him."
Because you were going to fucking be president. You have an MFA in theater and you're going to be fucking president. So that's how that fucking works.
Is it because we have a bunch of gay billionaires out there? Is that what the dealio is? Is that why he's gotten the money?
No, because if there were that many gay billionaires, we would have been able to get married in the fucking 90s. We would have had medication a long time ago. We would have had a cure a long time ago. There were that many gay billionaires.
I don't think Peter Thiel from PayPal, he's more funding
Trump.
Can I tell you why I think we shouldn't have fought for gay marriage first?
Sure.
I think that by the time we pissed everyone off about gay marriage, when we tried to be like, these teenagers are killing themselves, everyone was like, oh, fuck the facts. Like, they were tired of listening to us, bitch. Yeah. Like, I really think
that... Do you feel like it gets better, made things worse?
Oh, totally, because that was for white people. I firmly believe it gets better for white people.
Dan Savage's pocket.
Because, honestly, if the worst thing to ever happen to you in your life is that when you were 16, your parents found out you sucked a dick, I can imagine that'd be really traumatic. But if you already grew up really fucking poor, you grew up, like, with 5 kids in a single-parent home, or you grew up, you know, fucking like Latino in a rough neighborhood in, you know, fucking New York or Chicago. Like, that was probably a little bit more of a challenge than the fact that you like Barbie instead of Ken. Mm-hmm.
That's like a lot of people of color say the first thing I am is I'm of color completely. And then everything else comes
I am black first, which is so funny because everyone sees me as gay first and I go through my life as black and poor first. That's the lens I see through everything first. So I think I give more of like a class commentary, honestly, more than anything. So I relate much more to like comics, like fucking Roseanne Barr, who is really trying to talk about working class people every single like chance she could to really give light to that.
Not because, lately, though.
Well back in the day.
Yeah, I'm talking like 80s, 90s.
Original.
I'm talking pre-mental breakdown. I'm talking like the Johnny Carson days. Back when she would say that she would only start doing chores if there was like a writing vacuum cleaner. Like shit like that.
My favorite thing that she says is she used to hook, I guess, outside of gigs sometimes. And she goes, I always preferred giving a blowjob because at least, you know, when a blowjob, you know when you're done. Mm-hmm. But if you're eating ass, it's just like, can I stop now?
Oh, God. And you know, she ate ass from the back. You know, she did. You'd call her Miss
Jane. How else are you going to eat ass?
Oh, you never lifted up a guy's leg like a real man? I'll suck a dick, grab a guy from under the knees like I'm going to change his diaper and then just lick that asshole and surprise the hell out of him.
I've never occurred to me.
Oh, yeah. No, because I fuck a lot of straight guys and I like to scare them. Yeah, you think you're a fucking man? Try something, cocksucker.
So, Equinox, the fitness gym that includes SoulCycle, Pure Yoga, and Blink Fitness, has raised $12 million for Donald Trump. Mm. And all kinds of fitness people, all their instructors are walking out.
Because it's SoulCycle, too, because the owner owns everything.
He owns a lot of gyms and a lot of fitness centers, and people are just like, we're not having it.
And I love how their statement was like, no company funds went to whatever, and it's like, but you're paying him a salary, and he's giving it to him. So, like...
And he doesn't have control. He's an investor, so he gets a paycheck. So people are trying to dry up their paycheck. But also, two people are pointing out, like, Trump's biggest supporter is the president of Marvel. And, like, are we really going to give up our Marvel films?
I'm more than happy not to go see the next Marvel movie.
Yeah. If it means no Donald Trump,
absolutely.
I don't.
You know, I'll just have to stay content with watching Tom Holland's YouTube videos instead.
If you're over the age of 16 and you still give a fuck about superheroes, you need to get some pussy tonight. I am fucking sorry.
Let's get some pussy tonight.
Well, that's why they care about them, because they're not getting the pussy they want.
If you honestly give a fuck about a superhero or a transformer or like a robot, I need you to just never leave your house. Why? I don't want to look at you.
This is the thing I don't understand. Why are the CEOs of these Fortune 500 companies supporting Trump while they understand that Trump is like a bull in a china shop when it comes to the U.S. economy?
Because a lot of it, they're afraid they're going to stick the government
racist.
On them.
Fausto, have you ever met a 75-year-old white man who didn't act exactly like a 75-year-old white man? Have they ever surprised you with any of their behavior ever in their life? No. They don't do it. Why are we shocked that old ass white people are acting like old ass white people? That guy is their fucking friend. Everyone who has money or is in entertainment knows Donald Trump because he had an NBC show for 10 years and because he loves attention and he'll go anywhere and shake anyone's fucking hand because he wants to look cool.
But they're raising money for their own demise. And that's
they're raising
that's
money for
I
their own
understand.
Tax shelter. They're
I gotta tell you this, Jeffrey Epstein, he don't feel so good.
Yeah, they're giving them money because otherwise the government's going to come and take a bunch from them.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So
like, the government's going to take it either way.
Yeah, no, but you have to.
One way or another.
Most of them plan on being dead by the end of Trump's second term. Yeah. They're all 80.
And all those big computer companies in Silicon Valley, they all, like, they give to the Republican Party, they give to the Democrats.
Do you know what a Trump just proposed this week? Is to start regulating Facebook and Twitter because the voices of right-wingers are getting buried.
Right-wingers have such an advantage on social media.
I say go for it.
Such an advantage on social media.
What's the advantage?
None of those people ever get fucking, like, do you realize how many Republican bots there are? Do you realize how many fucking just bot farms out of fucking Macedonia and Russia there are that just harass senators and shit, that just harass prominent Democrats for no fucking reason? Mm. Like, literally, honestly, I dare anybody. I always bring her up because she's my hero. She's why I do stand up. Well, one of two people who's the reason I do stand up. Kathy Griffin, after the Trump incident, you look on her Instagram or on her Twitter replies on anything she ever does, and it's all these weird fucking barely English tweets being like, you lady in ISIS, bad, hate Trump. Like, all this fucking ridiculous. Like, they mobilize through the internet and they just pump up numbers and they just create a false appearance. If you look on the YouTube comments of any video, any interview about anybody that Trump ever, like, goes after that's, like, a celebrity or anything like that, anything about Colin Kaepernick, even if it's, like, a video 3 minutes of him talking about his kids, it'll be miles and miles of people going on and on and on about Trump. The Kaepernick on the internet, everyone knows that everyone lives on their phones, and it just creates a false sense of inflated sense of support.
And even I think a lot of people are actually very persuaded by that. Whenever we do a podcast and in the introduction we mention Trump or speak about Trump or Republicans in an unfavorable light, inevitably there are a handful of listeners in quotations that chime in and start talking about, like, this show's gone downhill because you guys are against Trump. And I'm like, when have we ever been pro-Republican?
Yeah, when did that ever happen?
Well, we did have a gay Republican on the show one time.
We did once.
Aaron Schock?
No. No, it wasn't him. It was some dude that Fausto met in a bar.
Of course.
And so then
did you fuck him? Was it good?
No.
I never had sex with him, but he wanted to have sex with me. But
then who doesn't?
But then he came over and we didn't recognize.
I saw your butt on Instagram. It looked nice.
Thank you. It was thick. He actually called me thick.
I did.
I love it when black people call me thick.
Multiple C's.
Okay, nice.
From that angle, you were double-cheeked like a motherfucker.
I know. You know what I'm doing? I learned this from Kathy Griffin, actually. Speaking of which,
because we had photos in the ass crack?
We were taking photos with Kathy Griffin, and she was like a turtle. She would stretched out her head.
Yep.
Forward
make like your a turtle neck look longer, out of the
so your
shell.
Face looks thinner.
And she made her thin, and I was like, oh, so whatever part of your body you want to look bigger,
bring forward,
and whatever part of body you want smaller,
put it away,
right? And so I'm like curling. Like, people don't realize I'm, like, curling to the camera.
Yeah.
Throwing my ass out, flexing my bicep, and leaning into a mirror.
Whore.
Yeah. And then the third picture is just Fausto spreading his asshole open and Kathy screaming. Like, you have, like, one
out
focus.
Of the rosebud.
Like, just, yes, absolutely.
So the gay Republican came over, and I didn't recognize. We didn't recognize him when he walked into the house because he had been wearing makeup at the bar, and then he also had a wig on, and these were male wigs, and he had a different male wig on when he came over. It was so weird. We're like, is this the same
it's
guy?
Always like the
and then he had to explain, he's like, yeah, I have a different wig on.
Well, Justin Jedlicka, the human Ken doll, he married a guy who looked and politically and acted and lived in Trump Tower and was like the gay Donald Trump.
Of course, someone who needs a sugar daddy to spend all their money on their plastic surgery would be dating a Republican who's like a fucking financial investor. And of course,
that marriage did not last because
really?
Justin,
someone that shallow couldn't keep a relationship. I'm shocked.
Every 3 seconds out of his mouth, he'd be like, Trump sucks, Republican sucks, I hate Republicans and stuff. And his husband's like, well, we're just both sides.
I have more tea I can tell you off.
But anyways, Aaron Schock. Who's Aaron Schock?
He was my representative when I lived in Springfield.
Oh, my God.
He's the Republican senator. He was a representative in Illinois who became famous because in a lot of photos, he looked really, really gay with a
belt, blue pants.
And so
he was on the cover of Men's Health.
Now, this is coming from a gay blog, and we're thinking probably the gay blog faked this.
I don't know.
Most likely in order to get views, because it is just,
I don't care.
It's too juicy. It's too good to
be
true.
It's alleged text.
So screenshots of an alleged chat between former Republican Representative Aaron Schock and a man by the name of Edwin Montanes, which I don't think is a real name, have surfaced online.
Edwin, he could be Puerto Rican like you.
They offer new insight into the disgraced ex-lawmaker's recent string of scandals. And just to be clear, these screenshots are from an alleged private chat. Their validity has not been verified and probably has been faked.
Those screenshots don't look like any dating app I've ever been on.
So in the chat, the guy Montanes begins by reaching out to Schock saying, how disgusted I am by everything that have been reported about you. All of your nudes leaked earlier this summer, they are personal and meant to be between you and whoever you're sharing them with, not the world. Then Schock responds, thank you so much for your support. I don't know what his voice sounds like, man. Can we do it like a nasier gay voice?
Can I read it?
Well, you gotta improvise it because it's in third person.
He has a Midwestern kind of little Weasley voice, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Thank you for your support, but like I don't really trust like all these liberal people who preach about tolerance and acceptance and compassion because you act so mean and nasty towards anyone who doesn't agree with you. Like, sorry, I don't give a fuck about your rights. Like, whatever.
And so on and so forth. And this is a technique that I actually think is really good, whoever's doing this, because they're aligning with him so he will spill more of the tea.
Totally. The shit that I get white people to say around me because they think I'm mixed, so I'm on their side. Oh, honey. Oh, I have a vault.
Schock goes on to say that he doesn't hang out in West Hollywood despite the reports to the contrary because Santa Monica is not my jam. Montanez responds,
only a bottom would say that.
Now, Aaron, I would eat that ass up like it's my final meal.
Ah!
I'm just being honest with you.
Latino guys,
I love eating ass, and yours is my type.
Is that really in there?
That's what it is.
Oh, I'm screaming.
I'm reading this.
And Aaron.
Let me just say, this has probably been fake, but it's too juicy not to report on.
Like Aaron's ass.
The internet thinks you are on drugs, and now I think they think you're going to go into porn. Can we be buds? Because I think you are beautiful. And Aaron Schock says, I'm sure none of them have met me, but they claim to know so much. In other words,
what do we need to know?
Okay,
you are a Republican who voted against anything possible.
Can I tell you why everybody knows he's a giant FAG? Like, he's the notorious FAG? Because the reason he got busted is because he got kicked out of his fucking position. He got kicked out of being a representative because he spent $40,000 of campaign funds to decorate his office to look like Downton Abbey.
What a queen.
He douches with apple cider vinegar like it's 1804 and he's got a real pussy. Like
Lysol.
Oh my God.
You know, Lysol was actually started, branded as a feminine product before it was used for bathrooms.
If it doesn't burn, it's not working.
So, question is, would you guys, Mark?
What?
Matt?
Yeah.
Would you guys have, if you didn't know him, if you just met him at a gay bathhouse or a bar, would you have sex with Aaron Schock and would the sex be any good?
The only reason
I know
was,
your answer.
Okay,
to this.
No. Actually, no, you don't.
You would do it.
He's white, so you want to have sex.
No. Here's the thing. I would only have sex with him if I knew he was normally a top, because I would only fuck him to rip his asshole. I want him to suffer. I want him to fucking suffer.
I can't top that. Or that.
I think he's, you know, physically is attractive.
Physically he's attractive, but it's
a lot
just,
of people
there's
are.
So much. It's there's the, just the energy there is just so off. You know,
I just want him to have to get stitches in his asshole. Like, I really just want someone to have.
Have
to get
you
in
ever
there
had sex with a Republican, or later found out that the person you hooked up with was extremely regressive or conservative or so on?
Well, I was raised by intensely racist white people. Yeah. So like, there's that. And then the second guy that I dated in high school, he would not tell his family that he was gay or dating me because he wasn't going to let him know. He's like fucking around with a black guy. It was
and that's pretty
happen.
Common.
It was never going to
yeah.
happen.
That's just, you know, the love that dare not speak its name.
And she met me yeah. and liked me, and he still just
still
would
wouldn't
not.
Talk, fess up because he wasn't ready for that.
No.
Aaron Schock says if this is true, that he's ready to come out. But him being outed at Coachella really got in the way, because now he's like
the only reason
his parents saw it. Oh. He was about to come out, and then his parents
that
saw
wasn't going to happen.
Wow, you're fucking 34. Mommy and daddy aren't paying your bills. Go suck dick on your free time.
So if Aaron Schock does come out as gay, how do you think he's going to be received by LGBT?
He and Milo Yiannopoulos are going to get married by 2020.
I don't see that happening.
Oh, honey, in 5 minutes. I mean, it'll be a double-edged
dildo. Listen, you know guys like Aaron Schock. Aaron Schock does not fuck someone who doesn't look like Aaron Schock.
Mm. Oh, yeah, he's one of you those gay saying? Guys that, like, he's going to fuck a guy named Aaron who looks like his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it needs to be him.
Mark and I get criticized all about this, and it's like, when Mark and I first started dating, we did not look like each other. We've
you
been
don't look like each other now
living
either.
Together mm. for so long that people go, especially, we get this a lot from black people.
Really?
The car, we're standing at a bus stop, Mark and the car pulls up and is like, hey, excuse me, are you two brothers? And I'm like, what? What like, is going on?
I just say yes, and then I start making out with him.
but it's but very important it's for people.
Stuff, blow yeah. a cousin or grow up, okay? Mm-hmm. Be a real hillbilly like me or grow the fuck up, okay? Make a choice. Make
but
a choice.
Maybe you have insight to this. Why is it so important for African Americans when they see two white gay guys that yeah. look like each other to ask them if they're brothers or not?
Because they're okay. comfortable enough to.
Okay, again, it's like a very comfort, because, like, what are you going to do? Beat their ass? Like, like,
but of all the
that.
Kind of things you what? Would ask a stranger,
but also, here's
you know?
Thing, okay, black it's people weird. Have a certain kind of complete and total social confidence, because what yeah. the fuck you going to do? Beat my ass? Like, no, you're not. Mm-hmm. Like,
I've had more beatings than you've had breakfast.
Exactly. Like, I literally had, like, a black guy when I was working on the west side of town, because I yeah. still do, but this was, like, a job deeper on the west side. He saw me smoking a cigarette mm-hmm. on the corner. I was ready to walk into my job, and he's like, yo, nigga, can I buy a cigarette off you right here? And he gave me 3 fucking quarters right out of his hand out the fucking window of his car. Like, that is a specific kind of social confidence that a white man would never yeah. have.
Well, when I had a black guy, I had a black guy once. When
you had a black guy from a black guy, and his name was Chris Brown?
No, I was fooling around with my boyfriend.
You were sexually
time, and
sexual
I got elbow to the eye, and I was like, that feels kind of weird. And then the next day I wake up and I've got a black eye.
Yeah.
And so I'm like on the train and stuff like that, and the only people on the train that would ever ask me about my black eye were black people.
Yeah.
And they usually say, you wear that well.
I remember like, when you had
the
black
the
eye.
Hey, no, this is before you.
But you've had other black eyes, and you do look cute. You look like a mm-hmm. cat that got caught in a mm-hmm. fight, and you're like, oh, my little rascal.
Well, because one of the things that is a defining feature of black culture mm-hmm. that doesn't exist in white culture is that we can't pretend shit's not happening. Like, if your uncle's a crackhead, your uncle's a crackhead. Right. Like, there's just certain things you're going to say. And so it's like, if you know her boyfriend punches her in the eye every Friday, you're going to be like, so did he punch you in the eye on Friday? So, like, if you got a black eye, I'm like, so who's beating your ass? Mm. Like, it's just going to be like, what's up? Like, we can't pretend like shit's not happening, because we like are always in an environment where like it's just too fucked up to not acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. So you stare it in the face, you laugh at it.
Yeah.
Now, what do you guys, you know, everybody's talking about this, Jeffrey Epstein, who, you know, dead men tell no tales. He had mm-hmm. very much incriminating evidence. The FBI has it.
It breaks my heart
it's
so much.
It's probably going to bring down all kinds of political leaders and powerful men, hopefully.
It breaks my heart so much that he's like
and
a perv and a
they
Jew.
Took him off. I think it was like 24 hours before he was murdered, mm-hmm. allegedly. He was taken off surveillance.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he woke up dead, you know, and people, all the cable news networks are not mincing words. They're calling this a possible murder.
Well, okay, here's my thing.
Which is very different from other types.
I just want to know how Hillary got in that cell and killed him.
Because they said lock her up, and she said for an hour.
Get me in there. Yeah,
she's like, okay.
I'll protect Bill some more.
Send me to the right place, and I have a conversation. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't really care when, how, or why pedophiles die. I just hope that they do. That's really sort of where I'm at with it, because, like, I got molested by 5,000 people when I was a kid, so it's like, they just can all, I throw them away. Like, that's
especially
just
the billionaire ones.
Oh, yeah, of course, exactly. Because, like, if you're going to fuck me when I'm 8 and not send me a check, how dare you? Like, Michael Jackson's kids got $40 million. You can't send me, like, a fucking penny. Like, send me at least a private school. Like, come on.
That is some dark shit. Oh, yeah.
It's the truth. It's the truth. Mm. But, like, honestly, you fuck with people's lives forever when you fuck them at the age of 14. Mm-hmm. Like, you're never the same after that. You're not an adult. You're not ready for that. The only way you're ready for that is if it's another 14-year-old and, you know, you, like, live in the country and you're 15 and pregnant, because they glorify that shit now, because white people are trying to get their numbers up. That's why I think they're okay with all those TV shows. Think about that.
You're giving us a lot of intense private information.
Oh, yeah,
right
now. I'm cray cray. I go down. I go Dick Gregory on your ass.
Explain to listeners who Dick Gregory
okay,
is.
Okay, so Dick Gregory is basically the foundation of black comedy in this country. He is our George Carlin, I would say, because he was one of the first men to really go out there and be a literary genius and a comic genius at the same time. He ran for president in the year 1968, and voter fraud got him out of winning. Actually, he got 9 million votes in the state of Pennsylvania, and they switched him over to Richard Nixon.
And wasn't he on Sanford and Son? He played Grady.
He did a lot of amazing TV work. Yeah. And actually, before he died, one of my really good friends who was doing comedy here when I first started, but she lives in LA now, my friend Brandy Denise, who's going to be headlining DC Improv August 15th and 16th. She's so funny. Anyone who's in DC right now, Brandy is, she got to feature for Dick Gregory at Caroline's Comedy Club in New York before he died, like about 2 months before he died. So, like, he's just a genius. He's really why he's a big part of what we come from. He was a Chicago guy, and he was really the pre-Richard Pryor of black comedy that really stuck it to white people. Because he would talk about being black and having money and living in a white neighborhood and, like, shoveling his own snow and be like, hey, you want to come over and do mine over here for $10? And he's like, wait till you see what color my wife is. Give it a minute. See who walks out to warm up that car.
Well, I mean, you had so many legendary, important comedians on, you know, Sanford and Son, who
LaWanda if you Page.
Watch LaWanda Page, but
LaWanda Page is a genius who never gets any credit. And her jokes became street jokes. Do you realize how good a comedian you have to be for your act to become street jokes?
Part of popular culture.
Yeah. Part of shit that people just say on the street. That woman was a genius. Like,
what do you know what she said?
Sex joke, honestly. Every fucking sex joke you've ever heard in your entire life came out of her ass. Like,
but if you watch that
joke about Little Red Riding Hood where she goes through and she's like, ain't nobody fucking in these woods. Like, she's looking around. She sees Peter on the beanstalk. She sees all these other fairy tale characters. No one's fucking in these woods. Everyone's climbing a beanstalk. Like,
it's a real shame. Cause, like, I know about LaWanda Page. I know about Red Fox and Dick Gregory, you know, And just so many. Queen Bee is another comedian that's regular on Sanford and Son.
Raggedy Star.
I want Sanford the sensuous and Sons black to be woman. Revived with Wanda Sykes as LaWanda Page. I would be down for that.
But you had these edgy, really brilliant black comedians, really very much whitewashed on the show, and you're just keep waiting for this joke to come and it never does, you know?
But the beautiful thing is that we have that footage of all of them together, working together. Red Fox and LaWanda Page, who were equal levels of just goddamn bring that house down. Doesn't matter if there's 20 people or 2,000 people in the audience, murderers on a stage.
And dirty as fuck,
and
right?
And dirty as fuck. Red Fox fucking invented nasty ass humor. Red Fox really is the influencer on how we talk about sex on stage. It's not Lenny Bruce. It's not Rodney Dangerfield. No. It's not these Jewish guys that everyone wants to pretend did everything first. They came after us. White people always do everything first. Always.
So, on an unrelated note, the price of avocados is going skyrocketing thanks to Donald Trump.
Good.
And the trade war.
I think it was a bad harvest, too.
It was a bad harvest. But, you know, so
good.
At the same time last year, the price of an average price of an avocado was $1.25, and this year is $2.18. So it's almost
guacamole
double.
Tastes like a fucking baby's diaper, and anyone who disagrees with me can eat shit.
So you don't like guacamole?
Oh, I have never ever had avocado presented or prepared.
You're too young to enjoy guacamole.
I hate guacamole.
So, there's anyways, people are innovative.
Maybe you like the fake one.
Innovative restaurateurs are actually turning to squashes and mixing them with a little bit of avocado to make a very similar texture and flavored guacamole.
I'm sorry,
and
it's but working. If the difference between $1.25 and $2.75 is breaking your bank, I just don't think you can afford to have a fucking restaurant. That's like my
you
mom.
You have no idea. The margins of restaurants are razor thin. Mm. When you don't tip a waiter, you're basically making that person serve you for free.
To me, it just sounds like my mom on vacation, like it's a $3,000 vacation. She's suddenly worried about the difference between $20 and $80. It's like, we're past that point, ma'am. Like, move on.
Well, I'm telling you, it's an interesting thing. I'm putting up the link on the website, and I want to know.
I want to try it.
Yeah, I think actually it would be good.
I have a feeling we've actually had that, because I've been at restaurants before. I'm like, this guacamole feels a little different. Or weird.
And last but not least, Caitlin Jenner, trans pioneer.
Oh, yeah, let's give her all that fucking credit in the world. She can't fucking read, and she's a pioneer.
She wished Kylie Jenner a happy birthday and posted a photo of Kendall Jenner on her social media.
That's fabulous. I cannot wait to have that many children who don't talk to me. Like, oh my God, she has 8 children who just don't deal with her, and she confuses them for each other.
Well, here's the photo that Caitlyn Jenner posted, is it Kylie? Yeah, Kylie is just a baby there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, well, parents
Kylie
do
also
that all
doesn't
the time.
Look the same as she did when she was a kid, because she got her whole face redone like a fucking house. So, like, they put in a new kitchen. There's an island on her forehead now. Like, she.
So she later responded, and she posted a picture with her two daughters and said, pics of both of them, better not risk it.
Wrong.
And, you know, and
why
I'm looking,
don't you know the difference
I'm
between
looking
your
at the
fucking
photo
kids.
Of the kids, but I'm looking at the photos of the kids, and they do look
they
quite
look a
bit alike.
They
each
do,
other,
but you know, you didn't but grow you up in the know. Fucking house with them every goddamn day for 20 years, so you don't need to know the difference. Okay, people who have twins know the difference between their fucking twins because those are their children. Okay, I grew up in a church where the pastor and his wife had twins. I couldn't tell Michelle and Melissa apart. Their parents could. You want to know why? Because came out of them. Like, I'm sorry. I need you to work a little fucking harder. I know you're dyslexic, Caitlin, but like, you can read faces. Like, you can figure something the fuck out.
It was probably her intern was probably posted for her.
So Caitlin didn't even have to get out the scrapbook for anybody. She didn't even label
they
anything.
They probably have like a whole database. They're just like, photo this, and it was mislabeled, and so there was
her
like,
personal
whatever.
Assistant made the mistake.
I don't need that discoordinated of a staff. This is why only black people would work with me. We communicate. We yell, but we communicate. Like, I would never be in such a mishmash.
So, summer's almost over. A lot of retail stores have put up their back-to-school specials.
I have one more year left of college. Don't remind me. Fuck you.
You haven't graduated from college.
Yes, this is my fourth year.
So you're still college trade. You can actually put student in your hookup profiles.
I technically can, but I hate men my age, so why would I ever go anywhere near
Do you
that.
Usually go for older guys?
Well, yeah, because I intimidate guys my age.
You do?
I have too much going on. I have 3 jobs. I'm smart. Like, I make things.
You're like a Mensa, but gay.
I wouldn't go that far because I don't understand how science and math happen because I went to private school. But I know about Jesus.
So in terms of like hooking up with guys, you know, you are saying that you don't trust a man that doesn't read books.
No. Because like I've gone out with guys who aren't very smart. I've gone out with guys who take 45 minutes to read an Uber Eats menu. I've gone out with guys who really can't fucking read, who don't have their shit together, who are like, I would say past dyslexia and into like full learning disability territory. Like I've tried everything because I don't discriminate. All you need to be is black and have a full-time job and I'll figure the rest out.
And just bring out a brochure.
Yeah. Like honestly, my like screening criteria are minimal. I want to get to know you first. I interview based on personality. And so that's sort of how I am. But I've gotten to a certain point where I realize I'm a big fucking nerd. Like, I would sooner date a rabbi. Like,
it does become sometimes really frustrating just in connecting with people when I bring up things about popular culture or queer culture, especially if they're not gay.
Yeah.
Or they're just like, I don't know who Madonna is, or I don't know what Cyndi Lauper is. And you're
they're gay and God. They think Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus is the national anthem. And it's like, ma'am.
It's tough because, you know, in some ways, when we connect with people, it's we're talking about the things we love.
And also, I'm a stand-up comedian, and I have to be nice to strangers every night, so I can be fake to your fucking face with no energy.
So like, as a comedian, is it hard for you to talk about popular culture to an audience that not necessarily understands what you're talking about?
No, because when I want to talk about popular culture, I purposefully go for stuff that I know my audience is going to get. I'm not paying for it, but I maintain access to, like a regular cable package, like somebody who lives in fucking Kansas, because I want to know what they see on TV. I want to know what ads they get. I want to know what a normal fucking person who lives in just generic Midwest America, whatever, what information and what entertainment they actually have access to. I want to have a normal Comcast package like every fucking else who's just in the middle of nowhere. Because when I work the road, when I go to those places, I love trashy TV and I want to watch the ID channel. And I know all those soccer moms love watching Snapped and Moms That Murder and that fucking Leah Remini Scientology show too. So like, I have no problem going in and talking about like fucking Oprah's Weight Watcher ads for 2 minutes. That's like totally fun for me because I want to go where they are.
Because they know TV.
Because they know TV and it's just common basic shit that you can passively enjoy.
For sure. And like when I saw Kathy Griffin, the first time I ever saw her perform was at Pride Fest in Milwaukee. And it was, you know, 85% of her comedy was stuff based on television shows.
And it's fascinating.
Mostly that Real Housewives.
And it's fascinating that someone can describe something to you that you have never seen and you still laugh just as hard like you were there in the moment that she's describing. That's a unique talent. That's a fucking skill. And so when I go on stage and I go granular on fucking like specific episodes of Leah Remini Scientology and the Aftermath, I'm borrowing a little bit of that technique from Kathy because she shows you if you're a really good storyteller, if you're a really, really good writer, if you know how to create a visual and you know how to create an experience, you know how to bring them with you, you can talk about shit that the audience does not know about and bring them with you. Because as a gay man, as a black man, as someone who grew up in a trailer park, as someone who grew up in rural Illinois, my experiences are not universal. But I can't not talk about where I come from and who I am and what I know. So you have to learn how to bring people to you and with you.
Did you see the thing between Tytus Burgess and Andy Cohen on Watch What Happens Live when he asked what it was like working?
Oh, I love when white gays get messy and black people won't have it. Oh, Tytus, you gave me life. Okay.
What happened?
So he's in a new movie, which I'm super excited about, Dolomite.
Because Eddie Murphy got $70 million for two Netflix specials and a movie and one movie. And you know those Netflix specials are going to be bad.
Oh, you think?
He hasn't done stand-up in 30 years. I don't care how long you tour. I don't care how naturally funny you are. It's a muscle like singing. It's a muscle like working out. And you got to use it or you lose it.
Okay. The singing muscle.
Tytus Burgess is talking to Andy Cohen about, was it Laverne Cox sitting next to him?
Yeah, Laverne Cox was there as well.
Okay. And so Andy Cohen is asking.
And Laverne is just breathing through her nostrils. I love that shit.
Just so he's asking, like, what was it like working with Eddie Murphy? Because, like, back, you know, he didn't have a good reputation in the gay community before.
He didn't have a good reputation with white gays. Okay. I would like to get that clear.
Okay. And so Tytus was all mad about it. And then I guess later he went on and did a video and talked about it.
Okay, because here's the thing. Okay.
Wait, let Mark finish.
It. But then I'm going to let him talk and then I'll do a follow-up.
Okay, because Matt. Here is the thing. As a white man who is a talk show host, you need to be aware of the energy you bring and the dynamic you are creating with the people with whom you are speaking. Yeah, yeah. And if you think that you are going to get one of us, and when I say one of us, I mean black performers, if you think you're going to get one of us as a white man to get on your show and talk shit about another black person in the same job, nigga, you done fucked up. You done fucked all the way up, and we are not fucking him. You think I'm going to get on national live TV and talk shit about another black man who gave me a job?
Yeah.
Are you fucking... he has the power to hire me and fire me, and he chose me. You think I'm really going to come out here and talk shit? And then also, the other thing is, he only had a bad reputation with white gays because everybody knows Eddie Murphy loves a tea girl, and he loves a chocolate tea girl, okay? Why do you think he loved Mel B with them big fucking arms? Like, he probably would have fucked Michelle Obama, too, with them biceps. Like, he clearly has a type.
Well,
he likes
famously, Arsenio Hall talked too. About how Eddie Murphy had asked him to set him up on a date with RuPaul. And Arsenio said, I don't think you know who RuPaul is. Exactly. And Eddie Murphy said, I absolutely do.
Yeah.
And we asked RuPaul about it. She was like, no comment.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I was asking, just for the record, you know, Eddie Murphy allegedly is been involved with the possible murder of a sex worker.
Okay.
And, you know, and it's something that was really...
The story is he was rumored to be with this woman and she was found...
She
either jumped or was thrown off a building.
Okay.
So people assume that he
talk to Italian guys anymore either.
Well, I was just clarifying.
Every single one of them's killed a hooker.
Every African-American has an opinion on this story and on Eddie Murphy about this.
Well, okay, this is my thing.
Just like the guy, Jussie Smollett, every black person was like, Jussie was setting it up. Okay. Every black person had his opinion on Jussie Smollett.
Just like every black person has, has an opinion on OJ. My opinion on OJ is that I get a Twitter notification every time he tweets. my relationship with OJ is that he only kills white women, so I'm safe.
So with Tytus Burgess, so Andy Cohen asking Tytus what you think about what Eddie Murphy is, I don't think it's an unreasonable question.
I think that, okay, from one gay to another gay, I know when you ask me certain questions about certain people, you're asking it for a certain reason in a certain way.
Yeah.
Because we, as black people, are able to speak the same English as everyone else with a subtext that belays different information. As gay people, same skill, different vocabulary.
So do you think I was unfair to ask RuPaul that question about Eddie Murphy?
I don't think it's unfair because you're not talking shit about someone. You're asking someone about their life. Because
I just wanted to know if RuPaul had gone on a date with Eddie Murphy or not.
Because, so he was he wasn't asking like, hey, what was it like to work with? It was like, he was like, what was like working? And then he qualified it with, because he wasn't very good with gay people.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Because you're following it up with this thing that doesn't concern Tytus.
Pushing an agenda.
Which honestly does not concern Tytus. And then also, it pushes another agenda, which is complete and total bullshit. That is that black people are more homophobic than gay people than white people, which is completely not true.
Yes.
Black people are just as homophobic as white people. It's just that there's a magnification on it. Mm-hmm. And then also, we as black people were taught, you know, in the early part of the 1900s, that assimilation and mirroring white behavior was the access to success. And so they're just going to act like, if you are sort of that black middle class, you're just going to act the way white people are. And a lot of Christian white people are really fucking homophobic. So we're just a reflection of the society we're a part in, a part of, and it's no worse than it is in any other ethnic group. There is not any single ethnic group in this country that has any tie to any religion or to any nationalism project that enjoys gay people. Point blank and simple.
Yeah.
It's not how that works.
And did that basically they moved on or what happened?
Well, so he went and talked about it like he did a little.
No. And also, but during it, Tytus was basically like completely ignoring the question. And he was talking to like his manager or his assistant over the side. And then Andy's like, what's going on? He's like, do your show. He's just like,
I just thought it was
interesting
that Laverne Cox was the one sitting next to him too, because you know she's a black trans woman.
Yeah, because Laverne is also like not going to come out here.
What's my turn with Eddie Murphy?
Yeah, because Laverne only likes white men.
Oh, really?
She's the type. She's the type. You give any black person of any sexuality $5, and all they want's white dick. It's just depressing. It hurts me. Like, honestly, I'm going to have to like find a guy from Senegal. Like when I get my check,
I can't wait for you and me to find white man and fall in love.
Never in a million fucking years. Yeah, if you think I'm letting a white dick in my ass, you might as well go kill Malcolm X again.
But I can see you falling in love with somebody who, like, you know, black people will say, well, he's not dark enough. Like a colorist.
No, absolutely not. I was getting dinner with my friend Jordan the other night, and he was literally like, if you end up with anyone lighter than Nelly, the world's going to collapse. Like, I have a fucking type, and I like guys from the West Side who never saw a white guy till they went to college. Like,
never before seen a white man.
Like National Geographic and shit. Like, that's what I like.
I met a hot black guy from the West Side the other day.
I'm really happy for you. The dick was huge, wasn't it?
I didn't get to see that, but maybe someday.
They grow like fucking cucumbers down there. It's because they don't get their trash picked up. Honestly, that's why they're so big on the West Side.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's dead cats in the street. They don't get the trash picked up. Your dick's huge.
This weekend here in Chicago, one of the largest street fairs in the Midwest, Market Days, took place. And one thing that I noticed, you know, despite all the racial tensions that happen in Chicago's gay neighborhood of Boys Town, it was very racially diverse and a really a wonderful celebration of all different people from different walks of life hanging out and eating corn dogs and food that they shouldn't be eating and listening to live music on the streets. And I thought, you know, for so many shortcomings that we have as a community, it's a great time to be able to come together and celebrate who we are and enjoy life as summer comes to an end.
Everybody knows fags love a party. Well, it ain't by fuck us if there's like good music going on. Come on. It ain't that deep.
And it was really moving actually to come face to face with a lot of listeners that came to us and they said, it's like, you know, your program specifically has helped me come to terms with being a person of color, of being a queer person, a nonconformist, and I really am thankful to you.
Yeah, people are like, I was 16 when I started listening to you, and they're like, how old are you now? And they're like,
40.
26. I'm just like, wow.
You're like my wife and I.
And it's just like, how dare any of you?
And part of it is that we're able to do this show because the financial support of fantastic listeners like you. We're able to bring, you know, a really deep conversation on so much culture and philosophies and perspectives because you make this possible. Yeah. If you think about like LGBT media and LGBT culture, there's nothing like this podcast, and we make this show because we don't see it out there. We want to represent these diverse voices and these pioneers, these iconoclasts who smash traditions and give us a brand new life.
And I honestly want to thank you guys so much for using the term listeners, because anytime anyone uses the word fans, I feel like they're like top 24 in American Idol.
They're like my fans.
Well,
like,
part of it is, is I don't think of actually the people who listen to the show. We think of them as friends. They're an extended family. You know,
people are always like, what do you call your fans? What do you call your fans? I'm like,
I hate that.
I'm not Mariah Carey. I don't have fans. You know? Like, that's not how that works.
And these really, I want to die inside every time a RuPaul's Drag Race girl comes up with a lame pun for her fans.
Yes. And talks about her brand.
Because honestly, you make $2,000 in a fucking weekend getting yelled at midnight at a gay bar. You don't have fucking fans. Like, I'm sorry. No. Fill a fucking theater, win an award, do something with your life. But you don't have fucking fans. Stop it.
So we want to thank you guys so much for tuning in, for listening, to sharing this podcast with your friends, and telling our guests like Matt Brown how awesome and amazing you are.
Thank you.
You're like the mixed race Matt Matteo Lane.
I get compared to him a lot.
Yeah. And he's doing great.
Yeah.
He's still doing the same material he used to do on the show.
Someone should pay me somewhere. I write.
But you're actually coming up with like new material every single time your mouth.
No, literally, open. Like I said, when I did, because this is the busiest week I've had in a really long time. I did 9 shows Wednesday to Sunday. I did 3 of them Saturday night, but I did 6 shows.
Why not do the same material twice? Doesn't the audience want to see your greatest hits?
That I have a lot, and I'm bored.
You want to entertain yourself first.
I'm so selfish for this. I do stand up because I'm good at it and people enjoy it, not because I have an attention need issue. I can get attention anywhere the fuck I want. I know what I look like.
You can take your clothes off.
Honey. I don't need to. Look at this face. I don't need to do any of that shit. I do it because I want to and because people enjoy it. And so I want to give everything I have. And if I've got 45 minutes to material to play from and I'm doing 15 minute sets, let's overlap a little bit. Let's change order. Let's play. Let's talk to the audience.
Well, you're building up to that hour, right?
I mean, I'm building up to have as much as possible. There's no limit. There's no reason to ever stop at any point because you just keep getting better. And why wouldn't you want to take something out and add in something new and show the full length of your experiences? Because if you go on like late night or like you do your special and you're using like the first joke you ever wrote, that's a problem. That's not good.
Those are fighting words, honey.
You should have learned something by now.
I think it was Chris. Yeah, Chris Rock said that musicians and comedians are very different types of performers, because a musician will get sick of performing their song and the audience always wants to hear them do that hit, whereas a comedian repeats one joke twice and the audience destroys them.
Well, because it's a different kind of emotional response. A musical emotional response is tied to a moment, it's tied to space, it's tied to people, but a comic response, it's much more like it's a release more than a direct emotional response. Mm-hmm. So it's more like a sneeze. It's more like an orgasm. It's more like tears almost. And so you don't attach as much to the moment as much as that it happened. And so they need different stimulus to make it funny, because laughter is not the same response as like a musical appreciation.
Matt Brown, we appreciate you, and we appreciate the great work of Toni Morrison.
And I'm happy you let me get into comedy science there at the end. I'm like a teacher and a practitioner.
I want to hear more later.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
On the meaning of life, yeah. Toni Morrison said, "We die, bitches."
Yes, yes.
That may be the meaning of life, but in the meantime, we have language. Mm. And that is the measure of our lives.
Absolutely.
And this podcast and our guests, as Toni Morrison said, you are your own best thing. And and the people that credit us with allowing them to be themselves, I want you guys to understand that you are your own best thing. You are wise enough to seek us out. And when you stumbled upon us, you decided to listen. You made that choice. You sat down and said, I want to know what Feast of Fun has to offer to me. I want to learn from them. And I'm going to change my life based on the wisdom that is coming across from this show.
Mm-hmm.
And that is inside you. It is not something we gave you. It is something you had in you all along.
It's like Lizzo Dorothy says, if you can love me, you can love yourself every day.
Click them heels, Dorothy, three times and get yourself home.
Can I tell these children where I'm going to be performing at so that way we can sell some tickets? Okay. Because my lovely Feast of Fun audience, like, I've been here 14 times, like, spend some money. Okay. So the next thing that I have coming up for our people that are outside of Chicago, August 17th, I'm going to be doing stand-up comedy at Apotheosis Comics in St. Louis, Missouri. And then August 23rd and 24th, I'm going to be featuring at the Drop Comedy Club in South Bend, Indiana. I'm doing three different shows there, and I will be doing three different sets. So you guys should definitely come out if you're in Indiana. And then also,
you'll be tearing apart Buttigieg.
Oh, I might. I really might go into. I'm going to ask them how they feel about him, and then we'll just go from there. And then
the audience also might like boo and cheer at the same time. What do you all do then?
In that point, we'll talk mild shit about him and move on.
Okay.
And then for my Chicago people that are here, because this is where we're based at Feast of Fun, absolutely. I'm going to be at the Laugh Factory on September 12th at 8 p.m. doing a show called Highly Recommended, which is all about weed and like.
That's going to be good. You're going to get stoned out of your mind.
Well, I mean,
you're just going to stand there and giggle.
I always am. No, I get on stage high all the time. I'm great. Oh, and drunk too. Why not?
You are your own best thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Your own best high thing.
Exactly. Oh, and follow me on Instagram at Matt Brown Comic. I might show you, like, I don't know, pictures of my titties or something.
Ooh.
Guys, remember, Feast of Fun is on Patreon, on all the social media, and we usually give you guys behind the scenes photos and goodies that you don't get on the podcast. And you can only get it on feastoffun.com/plus or on Patreon.
Can I share a quick story about one of your listeners before I leave?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you interact with people and you get to do the show a lot. Like, you know, people seek you out. People want to follow you in places. People want to talk to you. And I remember one time I closed the show with saying, if you want to book me or send me hole pics, my email is mattbrowncomic@gmail.com. Someone sent me a picture of their butthole. And like, that was just such an artistic moment. Like, I'm so happy for them.
What is that email so again? Brave. So the people can send their butts.
It's mattbrowncomic@gmail.com. That was honestly.
And you turned people on.
I'm really young.
Surprising.
I'm really young and beautiful. Like, honestly.
And black, gay, and talented.
Oh, honey.
Young, gifted, and black.
Like the old Nina Simone song. We going in.
Matt, it's always great talking to you. I absolutely love everything you have to say. And I look forward to having you on the show again.
I love you. I really do. I'm Karen Carpenter, too.
Long ago.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.